This is the Days Are Left Take for July 24th, 2016. I'm Filippo Denofo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Chris Sologi.
And yeah, we're like in the dog days of summer, but that doesn't seem to be stopping all of the indie developers from getting all their stuff out. We've got a lot of good stuff coming out this week. I heard that there was this, pretty interesting game that came out this past week that a few of you people are playing. I don't know. Yeah, it's got a lot of snow, which is kind of weird to release in the summer, but whatever. So yeah, I Am Setsuna is available. I haven't played it yet. I am very disappointed. That will be remedied as soon as possible. But yeah, I guess we'll get into what we're playing, and well, you guys may as well begin with I Am Setsuna since.
Yeah, obviously I'm playing it toward the review. Thoroughly enjoying it so far. I think it falls just a hair short of being a natural successor to Chrono Trigger, but at the same time, falling just short of being a natural successor to Chrono Trigger still makes it better than, you know, the vast majority of things out there today. So, huge first outing for Tokyo RPG Factory. I'm hoping to see a lot more from them in the coming years.
Yeah, as a spiritual successor to Chrono Trigger, I don't think it quite lives up. But, you know, mechanically, it's mostly there.
Oh, it's almost identical mechanically.
Yeah, it's just, I think, thematically, it doesn't quite hit all the marks.
Yeah.
But, it's, you know, for a first outing from Tokyo RPG Factory, I think this is something that they should be proud of and continue to build on.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. That's I Am Setsuna. You're going to... It's probably going to be, what, a four and a half star game?
Maybe? Ballpark, yeah.
Okay.
And again, something might happen at the end that'll just totally jack it up five.
Yeah, you never know. Yeah. So I'm guessing you have something to add to this one, Brandon?
There isn't really all that much that I can add to that said. It is true that the game, you know, isn't quite as good as Chrono Trigger is, but the problem with comparing anything to Chrono Trigger is that whatever you're comparing it will instantly be downgraded due to the fact that you're comparing it to Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, what game doesn't fall short of that?
Yeah. The bar Chrono Trigger is just so high.
Chrono Trigger itself is exceptional.
You've got maybe a couple of the Final Fantasies and Trails in the Sky and probably not much else.
Yeah. Chrono Trigger was pretty much a once-in-a-lifetime deal because it managed to bring together basically all the best and the brightest that the gaming and RPG had to offer at the time. And they all got together on a single project, and that project ended up basically being the trendsetter.
Yeah, Chrono Trigger was really like the defining game of the SNES generation. It's like, the SNES had games like Star Fox and all that were kind of a big deal, but, you know, I think Chrono Trigger was really way ahead of its time as far as storytelling and just how presentation and all that. It was
not just that, but the way that, you know, it deconstructed a lot of what people came to expect in an RPG.
Yeah.
The Chrono Trigger, everybody remembers the first big thing that everybody remembers that play is, you know, the trial. Where you're...
I didn't do it.
That guy.
And then suddenly all the stuff that you did, you know, and the...
Stuff that you thought was completely inconsequential comes to bear.
Yeah, stuff that you naturally had more or less been trained to do.
Yeah.
Yep.
With past RPGs, and then suddenly, holy crap. And not only that, but depending on what your actions were then, whatever the world you'd go into next would be completely different.
Hmm.
it actively affected what the next part of the game would be.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't get the sense that I Am Setsuna is quite on that scale, but still.
Yeah. There are an awful lot of dialogue choices I'm noticing, though.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but something's telling me that that stuff's going to come back and play towards the end of the game. And probably in ways that I'm not expecting. But as far as, like, battle system is concerned, yeah, it's almost a carbon copy of Chrono Trigger system. It's also...
Which is high praise in and of itself.
Yeah, because, I mean, and they, honestly, it's... They don't really modify it at all, and they don't really have to. Why would you modify it back?
Yeah.
And it's called ATB 2.0 because it introduces positional elements.
And that's pretty much it.
Yeah. If there was ever to be an ATB 3, I would give the Grandia battle system that name. But because if you put those three together, the original ATB 2.0 and Grandia, they do seem to form a concise, singular thought.
Yeah. Other thing about this game is it lays on the darkness thick.
Yep.
You know, this is... I mean, for the record, the game does have its light moments. You know, the occasional jokes and stuff. But something about being in the fact that it's covered in snow and just the whole soundtrack is basically piano with no other accompaniment. And, you know, just the overall scenario.
It really does make it hard to stand up next to Chrono Trigger's varied settings and tones at times.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's, I mean, just to, for those who haven't, I'll explain the scenario a bit. Basically, you're a guy who is a part of this tribe of people who wear masks who make their living as mercenaries. And you're hired by this mysterious benefactor to find the sacrifice. The sacrifice in this world is in this case, it's a young woman named Setsuna. And job is that every 10 years or so, a person is a young girl is supposed to go to what they call the last lands to essentially be sacrificed so that the monsters that the experience they would lay off and not encroach into human territory as badly. And, you know, eventually you meet up with her and her guardians, and you're sort of, you know, it's this whole thing is like, it's this realization that, you know, you're basically protecting this woman who's going to die, leading her to her death.
In a way, it's kind of like Final Fantasy X from a different angle.
Pretty much. Yeah, it's really like, yeah, she's like, except unlike Final Fantasy X, Setsuna knows that she's supposed to die. So other than that, I've been playing Super Mario Sunshine, because summer.
Yeah,
I explained that in the past that during the summertime I tend to gravitate to, when it comes to like older games, I tend to gravitate to games that have sort of a kind of thing to them, because, you know, especially Super Mario Sunshine is perfect because it's nice and bright and colorful. It's got the whole beach thing, but I hate the beach and I can't swim, so.
Yeah.
Puts a damper on that.
Yeah.
So. I just sort of live vicariously through games.
Yeah. Yeah, so you got the... Yeah.
Also something I always forget and then immediately remember again when I'm playing Super Mario Sunshine is that freaking Pachinko level. you guys know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, no? That one was a pain in the ass.
Yeah, I mean, the physics are so wonky.
Physics? That...
Physics? What physics?
It's like I've never seen balls do that before. That's weird.
Yeah, like in the one part of the game where physics are an absolute necessity.
Yeah.
Yeah. People often talk about the irritation about Sandbird, but Sandbird is a cakewalk compared to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I've been playing. So, I guess, who wants to go next?
No, I'll go, because I've only been playing one thing, and that's Lumo. Touched on it a little bit on Let's Weekend, which is it's kind of like an isometric style puzzle platformer. One of the really interesting things about Lumo is that it's very well aware of its roots and it revels in it. I mean, the game starts out with your character basically going to a little, you know, retro gathering. And there's like old computers there, and there's a couple of people playing arcade games over there. Then you go to the back, and there's like this ZX Spectrum sitting there, and it fritzes out and sucks you into the screen. So, yeah. That happened. Yeah, it's a good game. I'm not entirely sure it's for everybody, but for those people who grew up playing this kind of game, it's definitely something that they're going to really like. The elevator music is like one of the best things ever. It has a very not so subtle resemblance to a certain 1980s pop star that people share YouTube videos of. So yeah, it's something definitely to check out. It's on the Xbox One. I think it's on the PS4, and I know it's on the PC as well. So check that one out. Review is going to be incoming. I'll probably end up writing that up later today. So yeah. So how about you, Chris?
Yeah, so I decided to try something out on itch.io called Breach and Clean. This is from Rami Ismail of Flambeer. And it is one of those quote-unquote simulator games, but it's about cleaning out hotel rooms. And it's, if you go find the itch.io page for it, it's very much kind of inspired by a YouTube video where they're like soldiers doing their, I don't know how to describe it, but sort of...
They're training.
Yeah, they're lining up outside of doors, invading these rooms and cleaning them.
They call
getting back out.
Infiltration and extraction training.
Yeah. And so he's made this game with a few other people of his, some of his friends. And yeah, he calls it Authentic Hotel Maintenance Simulation. And basically you're pushing this cart through this hallway, and you've got towels, toilet paper, a mop, dynamite. You blow open the locked doors. And that'll sometimes stun the people inside so you can get through. So if you annoy them too much, you'll get fired. It's just a fun little stupid game. It's free on itch.io. It's pretty fun. I ended up lasting for my best run. Did a couple runs, about 12 hours it counts. But I think it's every minute is an hour.
Okay.
So I got through about 7 or 8 rooms. Yeah, it's like, oh, there's like vomit on the floor. You take them up, rub it on the floor, kind of. And then when you're done with it, you just kind of throw it out and it sticks in the middle of the air. Just leave them. You don't have to worry about putting them back on your cart. But you go and pick up trash, which from what I found is like pop cans, fish bones, and like a plate with fish bones on it. Replace dirty towels. With clean ones, replace fresh toilet paper rolls, all the while trying to not annoy the people inside as best you can. It's a fun little game. It's free and it's pretty cool. People should check that out. I'd be interested in seeing him sort of, I don't know, add a little bit more to it, maybe. There's like a Zen mode where I'm guessing you don't get in trouble for any of it. You just keep going as long as you can.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. There's like a little radio thing that starts playing some weird music. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Definitely should check that out. I've also been playing Halo for the Xbox One, so the Master Chief collection version of that, and it's pretty good.
It's Halo.
Yeah. I'm kind of like playing it just to see sort of how first-person shooters were back then. especially because it's not as kind of crazy and over the top as they are now with explosions all over the place for the most part.
Yeah.
And I really like some of the dynamic stuff they do where, you know, you can keep some of the AI alive. They'll come out and help you. And the enemies do a pretty good job of varying up their tactics a little bit. Still not a huge fan of some of the bullet sponginess of the elites, where you have to kind of shoot at them for a while just to break their shield and then get a few more shots in to put them down.
Yeah.
The multiplayer, I'll also try to get a couple matches in, and they did a pretty bad job of making it easy to get in there.
It's still not working. It's like the game had been out for a year.
It works. The problem is you don't know if there's anybody playing it. Like, with Rocket League, this is a game that I play a ton, and the great thing they do is they tell you how many people are in each of the the matchmaking servers, or how many people are playing that specific mode. And this one is just like, I don't know, I guess I'll try and see if people are playing Slayer. And you don't see anything populating on the little party list. Like, well, I guess nobody's playing this. Like, sitting there for 5 minutes, like, nothing's happening. It's sort of the worst experience. Like, tell me if there's people here or not so I don't waste my time.
Yeah,
I'm not too familiar with, like, all the various names for the modes. Like, Slayer, I guess, is Deathmatch.
Yeah, pretty much.
I was trying to play, like, Team Slayer, and it's like, oh, I'm just sitting here. I don't know if anybody's actually around. You would think, because it's Halo. But, yeah, just weird stuff like that. I managed to get a match in on a Halo 3 map. And, yeah, I kind of just wish they made it easier to just do, like, just put me in something.
Yeah.
Not like I have to go find a specific playlist and then hope that there are other people on that specific playlist.
Yeah.
Like, just put me in something. I want to go 5-13 on this map and kind of get embarrassed, though. I don't really care anymore. I think I had my one good Halo match was my first one. Then my second one was like 2-23, and I was like, oh, that ended quickly. And, yeah, so I don't take it seriously at all. Probably not as much as other people. Achievements on that game are ridiculous. It's like, kill 20,000 enemies and players. That's what? Win 500 games. Wow, you expect a lot of me.
Yeah.
It's like, get 100,000 medals. Like, I don't even know what those are. Because I don't think they ever surface them at any point in the game.
Yeah.
Because I've gotten a bunch from playing the single-player stuff, and it's like, I've never seen any of these pop up.
Yeah.
I don't see them in the menus. Kind of just have to go look at the extras or the stats part of the menu, and it's like, oh, you got some of this stuff. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's good. I'm looking forward to playing more of it. I like popping off the original graphics. And it's like, this looks pretty decent. Like, oh my god, there's...
It's like, that's a pretty flat texture there.
It's like, this went from Xbox 360 to Xbox. Pretty quickly, and it's pretty shocking.
Yeah.
And kind of speaking of Rocket League, I'm still playing more of that. I got through all the qualifying matches on the PS4 for the rank stuff, and really haven't done much else there, but I had a really good match in the standard mode where I went through the initial 5 minutes, tied at 4-4, and then proceeded to go 8.5 minutes into overtime, just stalemates constantly. Eventually managed to lose, but it was still pretty fun. Just everybody's just flailing around and not able to get a shot in. Just one of those fun things. It's like, man, either we suck or we're both really good at defense. I think it's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
A couple points where it's like my teammates decide to go back as a ball was starting to head that way. I managed to get a good shot in to set up a goal, but nobody's
there.
There, because they're on the other side. It's like, if you guys paid a little more attention, not just run away constantly.
I was gonna get to no one in particular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I managed to get a couple good stuff, and I had a 5-goal game, which was great. And it was actually competition. It wasn't like me just beating nobody. I did it to be really good as an attacker, so people set up shots for me. I just fucking boosted and just knock it right in. So that game's still a lot of fun. Playing some of the new cars that they added into that game, in the retail version. They had 4 exclusive ones to the retail version, finally released them. $2 each. I think 2 of them are from the original game, 2 are new. I'm playing one that kind of, I don't know how to describe it. It just looks like a very kind of, the kind of thing you would see in like Mario Kart 8. Where it kind of looks like you should pop out like a glider out of the back to fly around.
Yeah.
Almost kind of like that. Still enjoying that a lot. I think that's it.
Cool. All right. So, Pat, you want to talk about this next one here?
Yeah, so 20 years ago, there was a Street Fighter Alpha 2 event out in Sunnyvale, California called Battle by the Bay. The reason this is noteworthy is because it was the first of what would go on to be a series of events. The next one actually being Boston Brawl, and then the next two simply being called B4 and B5. And then the fifth one was known as Evolution 2002. So, I just put the link there in the show notes for anyone who wants to watch what was, unbeknownst to anybody at the time, the very first Evo. Was just a 64-player Street Fighter Alpha 2 bracket, all run on arcade machines. A lot of players there are still relevant today. Yeah. So,
20 years, though.
20 years.
God damn, I feel old.
Well, it was still 6 more years before it would actually be called Evo.
But. Yeah, but still, I mean, that's Genesis there.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they've got quite a good chunk of the tournament there on the... It was captured from VHS, of course.
Yeah.
So the quality's not what it could be, but at the same time, that kind of... It kind of adds to the feel.
Yeah, well, this was 96, you know?
96. And some of the match footage is off screen too, so you get a real sense of what match videos looked like before we had direct feed and YouTube and all this stuff.
It's like, how do you record arcade machines? It's like,
I think there's actually quite a bit of direct feed in there, just it's not as produced as, you know, some of the past Evo DVDs or what have you.
Yeah.
So it's just an interesting little little video, and the matches on there are incredible. If anyone's wondering why I'm always talking up Alpha 2 as one of the definitive Street Fighter games, just watch this tournament and you'll see why.
Okay.
So. I just wanted to include that.
Yeah, link is in the show notes, so check that out if you get a chance. Moving on, some good news for you guys. Development of Persona 5 is done.
Yay! It is
done. They have to feel relieved after that. This one took some time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I believe that the game comes out in Japan in September.
Yep.
Yeah. And, of course, we won't get it.
2017.
Yeah.
Arg for you guys, but not so much for me.
Now it's time for LSUSA to get to work.
Yeah.
Finish that up.
But hey, at least September we'll have Final Fantasy 15.
Yeah.
We got 2 Final Fantasy 15 games.
Yeah, actually, that's true.
Yeah. And, like, some weird CG movie that nobody cares about.
They're actually not wasting any time getting with the spin-offs of this one.
Yeah. Considering
apparently there's also a 2D beat-up.
Yeah, that's the game I was talking about.
Yeah.
King's Tale. It's GameStop exclusive.
There's also a mobile game that
they're
five.
They're mobile Final Fantasy games every month.
Yeah, that's
true. Close enough.
But this one's apparently somewhat related to, as like an inverse thing in Final Fantasy 15.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? Screw you guys. I'm gonna hope the best.
Yeah, nobody cares about Final Fantasy 15, so I'm just looking forward to seeing how badly that game does. And I'm pretty sure Matsuda is looking forward to seeing how badly that game does, so he can be done with it. But at least we hope.
That was just a huge millstone around the company. For well over a decade.
So yeah. Anyways, Persona 5 coming out 2017.
Valentine's Day.
Yeah. If you want RPGs that you can play now, though, Grandia 3, one of the, you know, Grandia series is something that Pat is a big fan of.
Yep.
Well, it's now available on the PS3, and it just sort of showed up.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Part of this community outreach for that Sony's been doing is just trying to source input from social media to see what games should be included on whether PS3 or PS4, what games should be made available on the service to you know, to keep them supported moving forward. And I really feel listened to as a fan with this one, because Grandia 3 was up near the top of every list I was posting whenever I got around to it. So I'm very happy to see this. That doesn't happen often. Grandia 2 is probably the one that people know the best, but Extreme and then 3 did some really interesting stuff with the battle system that just only really touched the surface of how much depth there is untapped in this. And Grandia 3 in particular seems it has this air of kind of the first step toward a more modernization of the series.
Yeah.
Would have been interesting to see how things would have developed if Takeshi Miyagi hadn't passed away.
Yeah.
But I'm still hoping that these steps by Sony, especially by Gung Ho, we've already seen Grandia 2 re-released on PC. Now we've got Grandia 3 on PS3. I'm really hoping that we're starting to see a move toward reviving the series. Because so far, Gung Ho has done really well to put it back on the radar. They're making it relevant again, but we have yet to see if they've actually got some original content in them of this scale. And hopefully they do, because it's just depressing to think that one of the most intelligently crafted franchises in the JRPG genre might have died off 10 years ago. So hopefully they're going somewhere with this, because the genre needs it right now.
Yeah. Well, with I Am Setsuna doing pretty well from what I can tell, and it's just kind of curious to see that this game came out on the PS3 instead of the PS4 as a classic.
Somebody didn't want to do trophies or something. I don't know.
Yeah, there's something weird going on there, but yeah, I don't think the trophies are a requirement for the PS2 classics on the PS4, but I could be wrong.
I think so, they are.
Yeah. Ugh. No, if that's the only reason that it didn't make it to PS4, that's kind of dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But it's still Grandia 3 in HD, so...
Yeah.
I'll take it.
Yep.
I've still got my PS3 connected. It's not going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, I gotta probably find somebody to check mine out. So it's very loud now.
Oof.
So yeah, that could be a problem. Anyways, so yeah, Pokemon Go came out. Apparently, it's making a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hand over fist.
Yeah. Because it's basically brought Nintendo's market value up above Sony's for, like, I think the first time ever?
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous if you take the Wii years into account.
Yeah. So, yeah. Nintendo's biggest success right now is a mobile game that they didn't even develop. That's...
Pokemon.
Yeah.
Which technically is kind of part of Nintendo.
Kind of, sort of, but...
They're a semi-autonomous region.
Yeah.
Nintendo. Primarily concerned with the franchise.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there have been Pokemon games on iOS and Android before Nintendo started making some stuff.
Yeah. But, yeah, so this kind of negated the consequences of the Wii U.
Yeah, it washed it off almost completely. Which you almost have to worry, is this going to lead to another E3 that is, as Penny Arcade put, we're rich as fuck. Here's a bunch of shit you don't care about. Yeah. Hopefully yeah. not, but...
Hopefully not. I mean, by the time...
Go ahead.
You know, by the time next E3 rolls around, NX will have launched.
Will be out.
Yeah. So, yeah, we should probably see some actual, you know, good games for that coming out, because it'll be 3 months
Nintendo
out.
Nintendo is smart. They are smart. They're going to find a way to put a Pokemon game on the NX that can interact with Pokemon.
Yeah. You know, there's definitely possibilities there.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's going to be some kind of connectivity with Sun and Moon, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, Nintendo has probably the biggest maker on their hands they've had in a long time. And product integration, man.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Pokemon Go doing well for Nintendo. I don't think anybody really expected that the game would do badly, even though it's kind of a shell of a game, really, at this point.
Yeah.
But, you know, from what I can tell from Niantic's, you know, roadmap, yeah, they got stuff planned, then they're going to try to bring it more in line to, you know, what a traditional Pokemon game would be.
Yeah.
So, it's just...
Forcing wild animals to do your bidding and battle.
Yeah, and, you know, any that you don't want, you can basically, you know, turn
put
them
down.
Into... put down and then feed them to the other ones. Yeah,
yeah.
Cannibalism. Yeah, that seems like a good thing to teach kids.
Yeah, you sell your duplicates back for candy.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's both.
Yeah, they kind of made an MMO.
Yeah.
Without realizing it.
Yeah, they did.
You're all the NPCs.
Yeah.
The other trainers.
Yeah. Yeah, the other... I should point out that pretty much all of the points, actually all the points of interest and basically the locations that Pokemon Go uses, it's all from the Ingress database. So basically they just reskinned Ingress with Pokemon.
Yeah.
And I don't really see anything wrong with that. It's working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does. It says a few things and I'm not entirely sure what. But... it's certainly working for them.
Yeah.
If you wonder why those random trainers in Pokemon were like in the middle of the forest doing nothing, kind of,
I mean,
planned out right now.
Yeah.
Funny enough, I mean, even though technically this is by the Pokemon kind of Nintendo, it's still very much kind of Nintendo's modus operandi as far as technology is concerned.
Yeah, just repurpose old technology and make it work for them. That's kind of what they've been doing for the past, you know, decades.
Yeah.
I think that may be changing with NX, but we'll have to wait and see.
Gamescom, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. Well, moving on, we got, I think like 3 weeks ago or something, we talked about the NES Visual Compendium Kickstarter that was being shut down by Nintendo for, well, alleged copyright concerns.
Yeah.
Well, that's back now.
Yeah.
pretty much the only thing I can see that they actually changed was they put the word unofficial and they took the seal of quality off.
Oh.
Yep.
So if that's all that Nintendo was worried about, it's like, what? Really?
Well, I'm not sure if that's so much, if that has less to do with, I think that was more that, well, the thing about America's copyright system is how unbelievably convoluted it is.
Yeah, the main point we should be discussing on that is the fact that past failures to defend your copyrights
in America, are treated, at least.
Yeah, are treated as
essentially giving away your copyright.
Complicitly taking on an anything goes policy.
Yeah. So basically every company that works in the U.S. that has any kind of intellectual property at all, basically by law is required to defend all of their copyrights in court. Even if it's something as minuscule as, you know, what they did with this. It's ridiculous and it's stupid.
Yeah.
That's the way the system in the U.S. is set up.
Yeah.
For the record, Nintendo themselves were almost a victim of this many years ago.
Yeah, but I think, you know, of all the companies, I think Nintendo's probably one of the most litigious as far as, you know, defending their copyrights goes.
Yeah.
That
seems to be more a thing with Nintendo of America.
Yeah. Well, Japan probably doesn't care too much either, but...
Well, Japan, remember, Japan has... the way they treat copyrights in Japan is a little odd.
Hmm.
Because they have kind of... They have a sort of thing where they believe in the spirit of copyrights, but if you know anything about the way the dude in Japan works.
Nope.
Anyway, I actually would want to see this Pandium when it comes out. Pretty neat.
Yeah, it looks like it actually will come out now, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, it was already going to pass, but because it was just a day from ending, basically this ended pretty shortly after it resumed.
Yeah. So yeah. Well, once this comes out, I think this is one of the ones I will want to get because it looks like something that you want to have on the coffee table.
Yeah, it's I mean the way that the Nintendo and the sort of Nintendo generation of games has affected really in many ways the popular, you know, the popular culture and. As not just the games themselves, but like artwork and fashion and music.
Hmm.
You know, it's an important document that sort of pays homage to how big an influence the Nintendo generation is.
Yeah. And you know, something just occurred to me. Nintendo just announced the NES Mini Classic.
Mm-hmm.
With very retro-style packaging that also included the seal of quality on there.
And also the very sort of retro-esque commercial on YouTube.
Yeah, do you not think maybe these two things were related? Maybe they didn't want the compendium bringing some confusion, and that's something I could see as a valid concern, given what they're about to do.
And I will say that it's good that Nintendo was this easy to please in this case, just generally speaking, because, you know, when we were talking about it a few weeks ago, it's how we've almost been conditioned whenever something gets struck for copyright reasons, we just assume that it's lost to the world.
Yeah.
And Nintendo was able to be appeased here, so that, and fairly easily at that.
Yeah. Yeah, like they haven't showed whether, you know, any of their layouts and stuff are going to change, but doesn't look like it at the moment, so we'll just have to wait and see there.
It seems like there is just make sure it's noted that it's not official.
Yeah.
Like having that seal of quality made it look like it was more of a Nintendo thing.
Yep. Yeah. And,
like, why is Nintendo charging us, want us to pay for this stuff?
Yeah. Yeah.
And this way, it all they did was put the unofficial name on it and make sure it was presented as such. Okay, we're done here. Bye.
Yeah. Now, if Nintendo was really smart, they would have given them the license. Because then they could have tied it with the Mini Classic release.
Yeah.
And then
but it's not going to be out till next year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Still.
You know, there's got to be another Mini Classic that comes out next year.
It's possible that later on, you know, they might make not necessarily a second compendium, but a new edition of that compendium.
Yeah.
That can also tie in with it.
Yeah. It's good to see that they're going to get it. So.
Yeah, I think the new NES thing is going to be better for this thing than vice versa.
Yeah.
So I think that'll get more people interested in those old games.
Yeah.
Hell, you never know. Nintendo might fire up with them to do a SNES compendium.
Yeah.
When they do the plug and play SNES.
Yeah.
That is inevitably coming.
Oh, yeah. So we'll wait and see on that. So. Yeah, I think you can order it now, so hopefully be able to get that when it comes out.
Yeah, the Kickstarter is over, but they're taking more on whatever
post
Kickstarter thing they got.
Yeah, just like Bloodstained. If you missed the Kickstarter, you can still get in on it.
I think it's like $45 for a hardback version.
Yeah,
not bad.
Hey, I'm down. So moving on, we got probably something that was inevitable.
Yeah.
So, we talked at length about the Nintendo PlayStation prototype that showed up and basically was, you know, oh my god, this thing exists.
But now what do we do with it?
Yeah, now what? I mean, it's like the guy that had it basically couldn't really do much with it. So, somehow Ben Heck got it. It's now in his possession. I think it's probably going to stay there.
I can't imagine better hands for it to be in.
Yeah. So he spent past a few weeks taking it apart, getting it going. Interesting modifications done to that thing. Okay, there were some actual hardware mods in there that were actually disabling the CD-ROM from functioning.
Kind of suspected,
yeah.
They had dirty pins that kept the RAM from talking to the console.
Yeah, that you kind of would expect. Some random bodge wires or, you know, they forgot to run the trace for the clock cycle to get to the cartridge slot. Yeah, oops. Yeah, that's kind of a problem. So they had to just hardwire that in. But yeah, Ben was able to poke at it, get the CD-ROM spinning up. Mostly, it looks like it's mostly all working now. Probably going to... Keep at it and see what's going on. And I suspect that the original owner may have had a disc for it in the attic, so he's going to check that and see if he gets it. It would be nice to see some actual CD-ROM software show up for that, because I'd imagine there was at least a test disc that was made for it.
Yeah, it looks like it has the same plastic as the Super Nintendo yellowed over the years.
Oh, yeah.
But only half of it.
Yeah.
The top half doesn't.
It's like the controller did that, too.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, which kind of tells me that the top half was face down, pointing down. So, yeah. Nice thing to see. It's up and running. It does play audio CDs, so that's a cool thing.
I almost wonder if this is going to take on a life of its own in emulation circles.
Maybe. I mean,
like with the homebrew crowd in particular.
Yeah, it's going to take, you know, somebody's going to have to reverse engineer all that thing, see if it's going to, if there's any way to actually talk to it.
Yeah, and I think once that happens and we have, you know, actual ways, means of emulating the Nintendo PlayStation, I just get the feeling that there are going to be some programmer types who gravitate toward it for homebrew games just to say that they are developing games for the console that almost never could have happened.
Yeah. You know, nobody will ever be able to play.
There's going to be a crowd for that.
Yeah. Yeah. And given that most of the parts on there are, well, I don't know about the CPU on it, but most of them are off-the-shelf components. It makes me wonder if anybody's going to be able to reproduce a board.
Mm.
So that will be interesting to see.
Definitely anyways. Plenty to watch for.
Yeah. Yeah. Keep an eye on Ben's channel. I think it'll be worth seeing what he does in the future there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So this week we got Marvel Ultimate Alliance 1 and 2 coming on the PS4 or Xbox One. And the PC.
I think we talked about this a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Given that this is Activision, ports to the current gen don't really surprise me too much. They don't seem to like doing the backwards compatibility stuff too much.
Nope.
So that's kind of a problem in that way. But
especially when they can charge you $40 each.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all these things that go regularly on sale for $10. Charge $40 for them.
Nope. So, yeah. I'm sure they're both good games. I think I like more of Altered Alliance 2 a little bit more. But, yeah, if you like the action RPG style, and that's kind of right up my alley with superheroes, which is also right up my alley, yeah.
Check that it's out. Almost a beat 'em up.
Mm-hmm. Kind of. I mean, if you played Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance on the consoles, it's kind of that style.
Yeah.
So, definitely worth checking out.
I'll just stick with Diablo 3.
Yeah. Yeah, I got that on Xbox One. I should get back to that. You know, like, updated it significantly.
They keep adding new content, and you're like, I'm going to spend $40 for this one.
Don't think so. Anyways.
That comes out on Tuesday.
Tuesday, yeah. I think we'll talk about that. Tuesday. On Steam, PSN, and Xbox One. I don't think there's a physical release of these. So, yeah. Also, we're not going to get a physical release of Pac-Man Championship Edition 2. That's being announced.
It would almost be weird if we did.
Yeah, but with the trend that we're seeing for indie games just starting to get, you know, physical releases for some reason.
This is true.
Yeah, but there's no anime in this.
No.
They only do the anime physical releases.
Which is weird.
Give us a Dragon Ball, One Piece.
Hmm.
We'll do those.
Yeah, but nothing else.
Yeah, so this looks like a crazy thing that they're doing where it's potentially got some sort of 3D aspect to it. Where, I know, the trailer doesn't really make any sense. It just makes it seem like it's going to be something interesting. But I guess there's potential points where there's like a weird voxel 3D ghost in the background.
Yeah.
And you do stuff on the screen to attack it. Something like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. But it also shows a lot of like the CEDX stuff where it's like trains of ghosts following you and you eat them all and then somehow that Pac-Man flies out of the screen and attacks the ghost.
Yeah.
Sort of weird shit.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. I mean, you know, I like CE. DX was okay. I think I like the original CE more than the DX one. But that may just be because, you know, it was a little less to digest.
I beat that game in 30 minutes. Got all the achievements. That's all it took.
It's not particularly hard. It's just, you know.
Yeah,
it was a game that was built around, you know, timed game, so.
Yeah. You can run into ghosts 3 times before they get angry and attack.
Hmm.
They sound like it dumps it down. As chaos mounts, more stuff begins appearing on screen. We'll be thankful for the leniency. Interesting. Boss battle mode, that's what we were talking about. You eat pellets to power up enough damage to damage the enemy. This continues on the tradition of remixing the classic arcade modes.
Hmm.
Sounds like there's some good stuff going on here.
Yeah.
Namco's generally pretty good about doing the right things to make these new Pac-Man revamps really fun.
Yeah.
Like they
it's
do
always
their
interesting
other
when
stuff.
They're feeling creative.
Yeah.
Because they try to do that with Galaga and it's like, no, you just made a dual stick shooter.
Yeah.
Boring.
Work. So, yeah.
Which is a shame because Galaga deserves a.
That should have been done like Space Invaders. Not extreme, but yeah.
Infinity Gene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That game was really good.
Yeah.
Update of that for the modern thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Why aren't we getting a Dig Dug? remaster. Just saying.
Some map be gone.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, I think the modern world does need, you know, the ability to blow up enemies with a bicycle pump and make them explode.
Yeah, but when you mention a modernization of Dig Dug, I immediately just pictured some idiot deciding it needed to be gritty and edgy. I don't know why my mind immediately went there, but
this isn't Konami.
Bomber Man Act Zero.
Yeah, Konami's done. They're not going to touch it anymore.
Yeah.
Well, Namco already released like the old versions a while back. Pac-Man, Ms. Pac-Man, Galaga, and Dig Dug, I think.
Yeah, get those on PS4, PC, Xbox One now.
Yeah.
And oddly, the Xbox One's backwards compatibility versions of those games exist as well. So, yeah.
Namco wants to sell them over and over and over and over and over.
Yeah,
and over.
They want to sell them over and they want to sell them over and over again. But if you already
over
have
and
them,
over and over,
if you already have them, you're still okay. So yeah. That's good at least. Yeah.
First thing with Namco is they keep finding release all these old games in prettier and prettier packages.
Hey, we got some pretty bezels on the outside of the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just looking forward to, if any of you haven't looked at the VR version of New Retro Arcade Neon, I would recommend you guys have a look at that, because it's pretty awesome. So, yeah. Anyways, moving on, we got Gravity Rush 2 coming out in December with an anime. Because that's a thing now. Games have to have animes.
Yeah, yep. It's an anime as hell game, too.
Yeah.
So it's set between the two games. So if you need to know what happens.
Sometimes it is just the best way to deliver a massive amount of story.
In a very short amount.
That would be kind of awkward if you just ham-fisted it into the game.
Yeah.
It's called Gravity Rush the Animation Overture.
Huh.
It's done by Studio Kara.
Yeah.
Did the Evangelion stuff recently.
Yep.
There's probably quality there. I haven't actually played Gravity Rush, so I don't really even know what kind of a game this is.
They're kind of open-world superhero games. Hmm. Kind of action-y. The weird gravity stuff where you fly around.
This is the game I think.
Well, if there's... if you guys are fans of it, I'm pretty sure it's... The second one's probably going to be even better, hopefully.
Yeah, it's basically the original Gravity Rush is like this game where you play this superhero. It's really kind of surreal city, where she has like these gravity powers.
And it does need to be a success because Sony's really going all in on this.
Yeah,
they got both versions of the original game on sale on PSN right now.
Yeah.
I think it's like $8 on Vita, $18 on PS4.
So check that out.
Yeah.
And speaking of PSN, PSN's Play 2016 sale, launch sale, I don't really...
It's their promotion.
Yeah, promotion would be a better way of calling it.
It's kind of like their version of Summer of Arcade.
Yeah.
Which
Summer Arcade is dead, so this is the premier promotion.
Which needs
now.
To be a thing again.
Yeah, or Summer of Something,
Microsoft.
Summer's almost over.
Yeah. So we got some pretty good games coming out. Headlander, which is up first.
Yeah, it's out this week.
Yeah.
That's an Adult Swim joint,
isn't it? Yeah, Adult Swim and Double Fine.
Yeah.
Right.
Double Fine. Then we have that underwater awesomeness, Abzu. Then Brutal, which we're all looking forward to.
Yes.
Yep. Speaking of which, we are working on getting Richard back on the show.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, that will happen. Don't doubt that. We will have him on the show, and he will bring his Scottish accent. Totally sure about that.
And if we're lucky, hopefully if he's lucky, now he can finally experience.
Yeah.
Now that the game's done, we might be able to. Yeah.
So don't expect another game from him for another couple of years.
Yeah. And then
be an epic JRPG.
Yeah. And the last game is going to be Bound, which is a game that looks pretty good, but I don't know a heck of a lot about.
Yeah, it's from the Demo Scene guys that made, I'm blank on their previous games, Linger in Shadows, Datura, all sorts of games on the PS3. This is sort of more of a traditional like platformer with a lot of story to it. And the cool thing they did here is the main character animates in a lot of dancing styles. So she does a lot of, I don't really know too much about what they're called, but definitely watch some of the gameplay of that. And you'll see it looks really good. And again, the world itself looks real good as it sort of unfolds and all that rebuilds as you approach different parts of the world.
Yeah.
And, yeah, 20% off for PS Plus people to pre-order these games.
Yeah.
You get at least two of them. You get a coupon code for 20% off an entire cart purchase.
Yeah.
So if you want to make, like, flash sales even better.
Yeah. Yeah, because those coupon codes will last for quite a while, so keep them handy.
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to probably pre-order most, if not all, of these.
Yeah, Headlander, I think we got a code for that. I'm not sure.
No? Maybe we'll see in another day or two.
Yeah, well. Yeah, Brutal. Yeah, can't wait for that. That's for me, that's the game of the event.
Yeah.
Cannot wait to play that one.
It will consume us.
Yeah, no doubt it will. So, yeah, look forward to that. So this week was SDCC, and along with that, there was the Sonic 25th Anniversary Party.
Yep.
Which...
They got Danrib really drunk.
Yeah, Danrib was completely wasted after that. There was this very interesting and horrifying Sonic-Hello Kitty combination thing that just is burned into my mind now.
Yeah, it was...
I cannot unsee.
It was so surreal just going back and forth between that and the show notes while we were doing Let's Weekend. I'm just sitting here trying to keep up with whatever we were talking about, and I've got this on my screen...
So what in the actual fuck? Yeah. But the stream itself, I will say, was awful.
Yeah.
It was not good. The presentation was awkward as all hell. There were technical issues all over the place, including, like, you know, 5-10 minutes of silences, just random volume fluctuations. A live stream, it was not good. If you were actually there, perhaps the event was a bit better, apart from, you know, the presenters who couldn't seem to remember what they were supposed to say. But that's not really what we cared about.
Crush 40 killed it.
But, you know, Crush
40. That's what they
do. So they had that going on. But what we really cared about was we wanted to know if there were any Sonic games that were going to be coming. And turns out there are two of them.
Yep.
So these are both scheduled for 2017. Early 2017 for the first one that we're going to talk about, Sonic Mania. Which looks like a collaboration between Sega, Sonic Team, and a couple of very well-known Sonic fan developers.
Mm-hmm. It's basically a Sega-sanctioned version of Sonic Mega Mix.
Yeah.
Which, and I said this on Let's Weekend, I hold as the best game in the series. At the time, while we were doing Let's Weekend and I was watching the stream, I thought this was the only game they were announcing, and I was completely okay with it. I've been saying for a very long time now that the Sonic franchise, the biggest thing that has been holding it back is their insistence on ham-fisting random gimmicks into their releases. There's none of that here.
Nope.
Yeah, they have added one new mechanic, and
yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, the drop dash.
Yeah. So I think, you know, they probably learned from Sonic the Hedgehog 4, both episodes.
Yeah.
Arguably the second one was better than the first, but...
Not to use that developer anymore?
Yeah. I loved how in Sonic 4 Part 1 there was no inertia whatsoever.
Nope.
Yeah.
I saw some people asking for, where's episode 3 at?
No, we don't need that. No. It's like,
like you're joking just... about Half-Life.
Yeah.
A lot of people were asking for Sonic Adventure 3.
Yeah.
I actually thought that's what it was going to be going in.
Yeah. Yeah. And to be honest, I wouldn't necessarily be against a Sonic Adventure 3.
Yeah,
it's just that after what we saw with Sonic Boom.
Or Sonic Adventure 1 and 2.
Hmm.
Those can stay back here 15 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, it could have been a Sonic Adventure sequel because they did show a lot of Sonic Adventure footage during that.
There was a lot of Chao imagery.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's that, but that's not what it turned out to be. It's a 2D, a very traditional style Sonic. I don't think they're going to go too crazy with, you know, trying to shoehorn story into it. Sonic fight Eggman, that's all we really need to care about. That's
right.
Yeah. There's three characters, Sonic, Tails, and Knuckles. The only three that we actually care about anyway. Yeah. So that's a good thing. It almost looks like maybe it could have been maybe a Sonic 3 mod. You know, that's... Seems like what it could have started as. Either way, it's coming out in 2017 for, I think it's going to be PS4, Xbox One, possibly PC. Although I don't think they've actually announced details on that yet.
I think PC is confirmed.
Yeah?
Yeah, go with the other 50 Sonic games on Steam.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, so get that Sonic bundle pack on Steam's getting bigger and bigger. Yeah.
Now, as for what isn't confirmed for PC,
Yeah, this is not confirmed for, well, much of anything. Project Sonic 2017, which is looking like, as we have in the show notes, kind of a post-apocalyptic version of Generations.
You got both old and new Sonic.
Yep. Old, new Sonic. You know, if you're going to do a sequel to Generations, they probably could have just called it Generations 2 and been done with it.
Yeah.
But, and once again, it is an anniversary game, so...
Yeah.
Even though both the anniversary projects are going to miss the...
Yeah, actual anniversary.
Details.
Yeah. They announced them on the anniversary. Yeah. That counts, right?
Sonic fandom is never ending.
And yeah. I'm sure at one point they were both on track for 2016.
Yeah. But I think Sega has learned from Sonic Boom not to rush games. If that's the one thing that they've learned from Sonic Boom, that's good.
Yeah.
Maybe hiring better developers might have helped, but anyways. Yeah.
I'm definitely wanting to see what this brain trust they've assembled for Mania actually comes up with, because I really think that's going to be the foundation of Sonic Team in the long term.
Yeah, because from what I saw on the trailer for Sonic Mania, they're actually really, really stoked about this one.
Yeah.
You don't see a company start their trailer with proudly presents often.
Yeah.
You know, so this is something that's probably going to be very special. And I'm really looking forward to that.
It's the first non-Nintendo exclusive Sonic game in a while.
Yeah. Because it makes total sense to limit Sonic to a Nintendo platform for some reason. Yeah.
Maybe when they're not that good.
Maybe. Put it on the platform nobody cares about.
It's the smallest explosion we can have.
Yeah. Yeah. Sonic 17, though, looks like it, you know, could be pretty interesting. If it holds true to the formula of Generations, I mean, that was a solid base to build on.
It'll be very hard for them to go wrong with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Generations is probably one of the more underrated Sonic games.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So...
Although, if anyone's listening to this that hasn't played Generations yet, get it on PC. 60 frames per second matters.
Yes. Yes.
You do not want to play 2D Sonic at 30 frames per second.
Nope.
Yeah, it's a little sluggish. Yeah, so don't play it on PS3.
Exactly.
Xbox One. Just, or Xbox 360.
Yeah. So, I guess that kind of leads us into our discussion of the week, which is where did Sonic go wrong in the first place?
Saturn.
Well, really?
They couldn't figure out what game to make.
Yeah, they made Sonic R on the Saturn.
Spinoff, relatively harmless, I would say.
Yeah, I mean,
There was the 3D portion of Jam, which was kind of a sampler for how...
What was supposed to be Sonic Extreme.
Yeah.
Which never
actually, the 3D portion of Jam didn't really resemble Extreme at all.
Hmm.
Sonic was a full 3D model in Jam.
Hmm.
Whereas in Extreme, it was 2D sprites on a 3D environment that rotated really weirdly. The sample portion of Jam really felt more like what would go on to be Sonic Adventure. It was probably a testing ground for that kind of an engine before they moved to the Dreamcast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If I were to take a guess at when things went off the rails, I would say Sonic Heroes.
Yeah, what happened? Yeah, the thing was Sonic Adventure 1 and 2, despite their flaws.
They were effective.
Yeah, they were effective.
They were Sonic games that may not have lived up to, say, the first three, but they weren't bad games. They were... No. You know, they served their purpose. They checked all the boxes that, you know, this works as a Sonic game.
They satisfied the Sonic faithful, but not really many others outside of that.
Yeah. But Heroes, it just started introducing too many weird elements.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Started introducing characters that nobody actually cared about.
Well, the thing was, you could kind of say the same maybe about Sonic Adventure 2. Well, not necessarily Sonic Adventure 2. I think one of the biggest problems with Sonic Heroes was that it introduced that whole trio mechanic that really didn't make any sense.
And from that moment on, they started forcing a gimmick on every single game that followed.
That's where it kind of became a gimmick series, where it's, what's the new gimmick?
Yeah.
Yep.
How do we change this up?
Take, for example, and this is probably a good example, Sonic Unleashed.
Yeah.
Sonic Unleashed would have been an absolutely solid Sonic game if it weren't for the lycanthrope part to the game.
Yeah, because Colors, Twilight Princess came out then. So. Yeah.
I remember
Colors was a fantastic game despite being saddled with a gimmick.
Yeah.
You know, that one could have actually gone pretty badly. But it was more like the gimmick kind of stayed out of the way in that one.
Yeah.
It was implemented more like the various suits you get in the Mario games, where the core gameplay is still the star of the show, and then these extra abilities are just something on the side to diversify the gameplay and make the game unique. That's how you do it correctly.
Hmm.
But when you start with a gimmick and then just try to ham-fist the entire franchise into that box, you're going about it backward.
Sonic and the Black Knight.
And that's the problem that has plagued the series almost ever since.
Sonic Shuffle.
Sonic Shuffle. Sonic Boom was a major
mess.
Yeah.
It started off well with, like, Dr. Eggman's Mean Bean Machine.
Which is Sonic a pretty Spinball, solid puzzle game.
Sonic Spinball.
Sonic Spinball, which, despite being Wasn't that a Game Gear game?
Nope. Genesis. Well, it was on Game Gear.
Yeah. Probably ported like all the others.
But yeah. It went to Genesis first.
Yeah.
There was that. There was Sonic as a franchise is a franchise that can do spinoffs effectively, but you have to be careful.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you'll end up with, there was Sonic and the Dark Brotherhood, which was the RPG that BioWare actually worked on.
Yeah.
Which, for the record, wasn't necessarily bad. And to be honest, I when that game was coming out, I was kind of hoping that I was going to end up getting the Sonic version of Super Mario RPG, Legend of the Seven Stars.
Yeah.
Didn't quite happen.
It was not that.
It was better than you would thought it would be.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I actually do think that given a good deal of effort, the Sonic franchise could do that.
Yeah.
But it would...
Yeah, it's going to take some very, very talented writers to dig the series out of the hole it's dug itself into.
I think you just kind of have to reboot it at some point.
Yeah.
Let's start fresh.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. They've got a ready-made continuity here in the U.S. all ready to go.
I almost thought that's where they were going with this project.
Yeah, because if you thought about it, the post-apocalyptic thing, that's basically...
That's
Sonic
right there.
Set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 I noticed that we've all kind of, avoided Sonic 2006.
Yeah, we all kind of pretend
that
it doesn't exist.
We shall not speak its name.
It did have a different problem. Because you can't say that it was saddled with any gimmicks or anything. It was almost the straight opposite.
It was basically what they tried to turn the Sonic universe into Final Fantasy and failed miserably.
Yeah.
Well, not just that, but the biggest problem with Sonic 2006 more than anything else by far is that it was fucking broken as shit.
Oh, yeah.
It was Sonic. The gimmick was launch title Sonic. Got to get on these HD platforms.
Yeah, it was, what was it?
The gimmick was release it in pre-alpha state.
Yeah. Like, okay, here's, if you want to know how bad it was, Yuji Naka, the guy, that's his name, right? The guy who's behind Sonic. Yeah, he basically jumped ship halfway through the project. So...
Oh my god, this like... This
That's how bad it was.
Yeah, the director of this game was the game designer on Sonic R.
Oh.
Director of Samba de Amigo.
Billy Hatcher. Those games aren't exactly bad, but I think maybe it was a bit too... This particular Sonic title was a bit too much for him.
Yeah.
It was bad. It was broken. Sonic's relationship with that human princess was probably illegal.
At least in all 50 states, I'm pretty sure.
I heard the whole human thing was there from the start.
Yeah.
He's been into girls since the start.
No shit.
Yeah.
People didn't really realize that until... 13 years later.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they hadn't actually portrayed any humans in the world until
except
long
for
time
Robotnik,
after they
launched.
Yeah. Except,
here's the one human.
Yeah. He's the only one that exists in this world. So, it makes you wonder, Sonic Mania and Project 2017, kind of restoring your faith in the franchise, or
I want to say that, but if experience has shown us anything, it's that is that Sonic Team, when they get too big in the head, have an amazing ability to seize defeat from the jaws of victory.
Very good point. Yeah,
I'm all in.
Yeah, I hope for the best, and if they've managed to get the smart people on this franchise and
you know, Sega is trying to redeem themselves,
yeah,
then, you know, hopefully, yeah, it'll get the Sonic franchise back on track.
Yeah.
Because he deserves it, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Sonic Mania is probably going to go a long way towards that, to getting back the people that they lost.
Yeah.
And then, you know, probably if Sonic Project 2017 comes out and is actually good, that's probably going to, you know, help them build a more, you know, bigger base.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Something else I'd like to see. I want Sonic Team to be able to do, you know, once these games are done, let Sega give them the chance to make another sort of original non-Sonic related project. Because
mm-hmm.
when they're allowed to, you know, do something that isn't Sonic related, they've produced some pretty incredible stuff. Especially when Yuji Naka himself is involved.
Yeah.
Because we got stuff like Nights into Dreams, we got Ristar, you know, we got Choo Choo Rocket, stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, the first Phantasy Star Online was them. And that was basically the first console MMO. So
it was a great one.
You almost have to wonder if there's some kind of almost internal competition going on with this.
Yeah, but part of
They're taking the Colors / Generations team, and then this, I'm not sure what, just this collective of indie developers, basically.
Is, what's his name, Dave Fepard, or whatever his name is? Is he in the, I hope he is, because he's pretty much the guy that made the best Sonic fan games.
I'm honestly not sure.
Blake Fepard, that's his name.
But it seems like there's this internal competition where they're going to put this team on this game, put that team on that game. Let's see whose vision takes better.
Exactly.
And then I wouldn't be surprised if whichever game does better determines who basically gets the keys to the car.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
which I fully support. I think that's a great way of going about it. If that's what's really going on here.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Unless they're looking at it more of a 1-2 punch.
That could work too.
You know, it's going to be very interesting to see, because you don't typically see two games in the same franchise show up in the same year.
Yeah.
Yep.
I should also point out that Sonic Project 2017 is going to be an NX title. As well as PS4, Xbox One, which makes me wonder if those rumors of the NX being, you know, power-wise about as powerful as the Xbox One and PS4, or more powerful, if they're not actually true.
Well, it kind of has to be, or else Nintendo's wasting their time right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like they can't come out with something that's less powerful than the Xbox One at this point.
Right.
Yeah, they'd be bad. And if CD Projekt Red is behind it, then there's probably something.
Well, they said what they saw they liked, and that's pretty coming from pretty much the one developer I respect above all the others.
Yeah.
That means
and
a lot.
And one of the really hardware hungry ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've tried really hard to destroy the Xbox One and PS4.
Yeah.
More or less.
Managed it.
They're going easy with their Gwent game.
Yeah. PlayGwent.com. There you can sign up for the beta. But, so, yeah, I think we've got a show for today.
Yep.
Yeah. So, as always, remember, you can sign up for our Facebook page. Go on facebook.com/DayZeroUpdate, like us, talk to us, chime in on this discussion if you want. You can also subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, TuneIn, Google Play, Music. Yeah. And your favorite other Android or iOS podcatcher app. We're in there. Just search for DayZeroUpdate. You'll find us. So, I am Filippo Dinolfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
Brandon Perkins.
I'm Chris Sologi.
We'll see you guys all next week.